Caterpillars often feed hidden from us in leaf shelters and inside fruit and various places, unseen, like this leaf roller and codling moth. The mescal worm feeds inside of agave hearts. This is a red one that Wagner didn't get in his book. Clothes moths carry their shelters with them. External feeding caterpillars, by definition, are more visible to us, and they rely heavily on locomotion to get from leaf to leaf or food source to food source. And an important part of external feeding is having abdominal prolegs, which are very much needed for attachment onto leaf surfaces. And typically, these prolegs occur on the third through sixth abdominal segments, as well as on the anal one, the A10. And of course, you have fewer prolegs with loopers. This Polyphemus, you'll see how it can hang on. Incidentally, the original sound to this had my son crying at the exact moment that that caterpillar fell over. Another important feature of prolegs is that they have crochets, also called crochets or crotchets, hooks that are on the prolegs, and they're very important for grasping onto silk, especially on smooth surfaces or on leaves. Also, the thoracic legs help to grasp also in positioning the head during feeding. Though tend to play less of a role in locomotion. This epipyropid larva is a great example of showing how tarsal claws on the thorax and the hooks on the abdominal segments hook into silk. Epipyropids are parasites on hoppers and cicadas, and this one here is actually leaving the cocoon, or leaving to make a cocoon, leaving the hopper host. The overview of the talk today is that I'm going to give a review of the limacoded group and move through its phylogeny, showing videos of locomotion and related behavior. All the while, I'll be showing you various aspects of the morphology, modifications related to the locomotion. The superfamily Zygnoidea is made up of external feeders that tend to be very slug-like, and part of what contributes to this appearance is the fact that their heads are retractile for the most part, and they are slow growers, commonly have spiny defenses, though often you have larvae that are cryptic as well. And there's very often major changes between early instars and late instars. These are the 13 families presently considered to be in the superfamily. My work on the cladistic or phylogenetics of the Limacoda group showed that there were four families in the group, including three from the New World, the Megalopygids, Aedids, and Delcerids, and then the largest family, the cosmopolitan family, Limacodidae, having what I've now found to be about 1,500 species, according to my most recent estimates. Aedidae was previously a subfamily of Megalopygidae, a very small group of six, and Somabrachidae, often associated with Megalopygids, was found to be a possible sister group to the Limacodid group, but not doesn't share any unique characters or characters that are unique to it and Megalopygidae. Here's a summary of the uniquely derived larval characters. They have extra prolegs on the segments A2 and A7. There's a reduction in length between A7th segment and the A10th, so there's really not much of a gap, of no gap really. Above, the anal plate is reduced and doesn't have spiny clumps or verruci. And then they have short legs, thoracic legs. This is a first instar of a soma brachid, which spins silk rather haphazardly, which is typical of first instars. And note the large thoracic legs, as well as the presence of prolegs on the second and seventh segments. The families Epipyropidae and Cyclotornidae are both parasitic. They were previously associated with Limacodidae and Delceridae based on the fact that they're very slug-like in appearance and have changes in their larval form. In addition, Epipyropids, the adults look very much like Delceridae in terms of their wing shape. They share no derived traits, however, with the Limacoda group, and recent evidence has also been suggested that they don't belong in the group by the Tree of Life work that's going on presently. So now we're going to go through our survey of the locomotion, starting with Megalopygidae. And this woolly megalopygid, of course, is very deceptive because there's some nasty spines underneath all that fluff. When you see them on narrow surfaces like this wire, you can see what I was saying before about the prolegs, how little gap there is between any of the body segments during locomotion. You can also see their ability to spin around. They're fairly flexible. When you put them on a vertical piece of plastic or glass, you can see the ripples of locomotion that we're going to be seeing throughout the talk. And it's only going to get more fluid with the other groups that we see. But once again, we're seeing the contact of all these proleg segments and a squeezing of hemolymph underneath. You're seeing a little bit because there's a lot of muscles attached to all those prolegs. Looking up close at the undersurface when they're on a glass again, you can see the sucker action of the membranous pads found on the prolegs. And this is a great help in them adhering to smooth surfaces. And you can see the crochets as well in the SEM photo. Typically, megalopygids lack crochets on the second and seventh prolegs. And as a matter of fact, crochets were not known to be found on these segments till I started finding them in the 1980s. Here's an example of Mesocea, which has crochets on all the proleg segments, and in addition has a lateral sucker as well. So once again, between having these membranous pads and an additional sucker, we can see the importance of being able to adhere to smooth surfaces. And typical of caterpillars, you see the figure eight silk spinning, and they use a spinneret that's straw-like, much like a zygenid or many other Lepidoptera. Okay, now we're going to move on to Aedidae. And Aedids look very much like spiny Limacodids until you turn them over and you see their prolegs. Here's the first instars, which have a much more flexible cuticle than we'll see in later instars. Their locomotion looks very much like Limacodids and Delcerids, but not quite as fluid. When you look at scanning electron micrographs of the undersurface of these aedids, we find that they have membranous pads. And this is a characteristic that I didn't detect in my work back in 96 because I was only examining alcohol specimens of later instars. And apparently these pads sort of get sucked under the crochets when they're preserved in this way. This is a side-by-side comparison of aedid versus a megalopidgid, and what's worth noting is that the tactile CD are just simple, or the lateral row, I should say, is a simple tactile ceda or CD, whereas in megalopidgids you have clumps of spines and hairs in that position, as well as other clumps of hairs in lower positions, including the proleg bases. Okay, here's looking at the membranous pads during locomotion as well as the tactile ceti. And this is a later instar, so the locomotion is becoming less fluid. Again, the figure eight spinning of the or laying down of the silk and a typical spinneret in this species. However, another species of aedid that I wrote about in the 90s builds a cocoon that has the false parasitoid exit holes. That has a little extra little apparatus on the end of the spinneret, which I suspect is used for its special construction. This species actually builds an underground cocoon, so a very different biology. It's amazing a group of only six species has such differences. Okay, now moving on to the limacodids and delcerids. Limacodids are very diverse in their dorsal defenses, having, you know, saddlebacks and spines, and then going all the way to having, you know, very cryptic leaf sorts of forms. Whereas delcerids tend to be covered with these slimy sort of gelatinous coverings, which you can brush off, or if ants try to get them, they get all slimed up and either die or get incapacitated. Here's a list of shared derived characters of the larvae, including this extremely elastic ventral cuticle, the prolegs being modified into sucker discs, crochets being reduced or lost, and the spinneret is brush-like. Looking up close, we can see through the translucent ventrum, and we see the fat bodies, and some you can see the nerve cords. This one's about to molt, so they get a little more cloudy at that point. Also notice that the anal segment doesn't contact the substrate during locomotion. One of the things that's very hard to see are the thoracic legs, because they're highly reduced in size. And if you look at the ways of the locomotion, they actually continue up into the thorax. Also, they're capable of forward and reverse movement. The ripple can go either direction. Here we can see the sucker discs more closely in this Montaleuca. Okay, now looking at the delcerid on a flat surface. Oh, come on. Oh, see, I back up on that one. Okay, this delcerid still has crochets, but they have no influence on the locomotion. They're just as you'll see in a minute, they're just a small semicircle of them. Essentially the same locomotion. Okay, another thing that these both Limacodids and Delcerids are capable of doing is gripping in such a way and being able to spin around. You're also noticing a certain amount of preening and with their mouths, which we'll talk about in a second. Here we see the use of the spinneret as a cleaning brush, so they go back and forth to maintain the stickiness. And here again is the brush-like spinneret in Delcerity. Okay, one of the mysteries that I've talked about in the past and written about is that when you look at the ventral surface of these larvae, you notice sort of a surface film. And some of that appears to come from the kind of untanned silk that's being laid down as ribbons. But I also suspect that there's some cuticular oils and certainly there are other sources of this moisture just picked up in nature, but also perhaps from little droplets, as we'll see now. This has just been deposited by the anal end there, but as it's laid down, it actually gets right back onto the venture and gets pulled up. And you tend to see these droplets in the limacodid larvae shortly before they spin their cocoons. But I would imagine they occur at other times as well, so this may be another source of that surface film. Talked a little bit about silk ribbons. One of the interesting things is that you can see, this is actually a way that you can find limacodid larvae, is by seeing either little shiny patches of silk, because they're laid down not as into or your typical strands of silk, but very flatly pressed into the leaf surface. And what this enables the larvae to do is actually sit on these little silk pads and molt, because you got to remember these have lost their usual prolegs and crochets that hook into the silk, so it provides them for a nice little surface to be able to molt on. Delcerids, I need to do more research on this, but I suspect that the silk that they leave on leaves are more typical silk strands, and it's possible that that's one reason why they've retained crochets, is to stay hooked onto that silk. Okay, now on, as I was speaking of crochets, Delcerids, as I mentioned, have reduced crochets, but perhaps what's most interesting is the fact that they're not present in the first few instars. They're actually added on later, and as is the case for primitive limacodids. And further interesting is that, at least in one species, Stair found that the second and seventh segments add the crochets even later than the others. In Limacodidae, I found crochets on two primitive genera from Africa, and just like the Delcerids, not found in the first few instars, yet they're absent in all the other Limacodids known. I think that this loss of crochets in Limacodidae probably occurred by the sort of a deletion of the final instars, or the expression of crochets sort of gets deleted off. In other words, they never express themselves in later stages like they do in Delcerids. So in a sense, you could call it a terminal deletion, or there's other developmental terms for that. In this Crothema, they add the crochets, but interestingly enough, we don't get that second and seventh pair. So there's a certain amount of variation throughout this group, actually, of the expression of crochets. Limacodids, as I said, don't express them till later in stars in the primitive, as do Delcerids. Aedids never, the three species of Aedids that have been reared don't ever express them on the second and seventh yet, have prolegs. Megalopygids are variable, as well as Delcerids, so there's a possibility of a lot of switching on and switching off of crochets in this group. So to summarize the evolution of the locomotion in the Limacodidae, you know, along with it, you're seeing an increased contact with the substrate. You have the addition of the prolegs on the second and seventh segments, prolegs modified to suckers, suckers forming on gap regions like the first abdominal segment develop suckers, which are clearly not homologous to prolegs. Crochets are reduced in size or loss. The lateral and subventral cedae are simple tactile cedae, or they go to that from being verruci. So they, in megalopigids, they're clumps of hairs and spines, and they go to simple, what I call curb tickler cedae, because they're close to the locomotion surface. There's a overall size reduction in thoracic legs. And then the spinneret becomes more of a spinneret brush. Here's a summary of how the modification of the proleg segments occurred, basically the proleg bases becoming sucker discs. So I guess one question is, will the new morphological information that we get and will the data from the Tree of Life project overturn these results, find, say, Adidae to be sister to, or to be in the same group with Megalopygidae? Stay tuned. Oops. Ah. Let me go back here. Thank you. Yeah, actually, I don't think there's much connection there. I think one thing about Limacodids in general that's different is they're a little tougher on the dorsal surface, whereas Delcerids seem very vulnerable, you know, very soft-bodied throughout. So I think it has more to do with their dorsal defenses than their ventral surfaces. Uh-huh. Cool.
Do you know that in the behavior you show that they're releasing the liquid, this possibility that might be pursued is test these kind of bioassay for antimicrobial activity, and that's something we haven't looked at very much through the other Lepidoptera.
That would be fascinating because, of course, you see them, you know, either laying their silk on themselves or using their spinneret brushes, so maybe that's another explanation for, because, of course, Penn State. The one crawling was late, and then the one feeding was early. But yeah, there's waxy stuff on them. Yeah, powdery waxy stuff.
Okay, time for one more question, if there is.
Probably the primary is going to the tactile CD on the lateral row, but there's others. Adult ones.
And the morphological synaptomy for ADIDs plus megalopygids would be those extra little sucker patches on the side of the.
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
Great.